Hello and welcome to IVF BFF with me, Sian.
And me, Catherine.
A podcast detailing IVF in real time and shining a light on the experience of infertility.
Join us as we lift the lid and demystify all things fertility, sharing our stories, the highs and the lows, and everything in between. Hi everybody, it's Catherine here. I just wanted to say this episode is a brilliant chat with the wonderful girls from Big Fat Negative with Emma and Gabby. We were so lucky to have them come and chat to us and we really love the conversation and I hope you enjoy the episode. Just to say too, we recorded this a little while back. It was recorded back in May, which was during my last 2 week wait. Of course, we meant to put it out a little bit sooner than this, but life happens, curveballs came our way and things got a little bit real for us. So it was put on hold, but we really want to share it with you because it's a fantastic chat and the girls were absolutely wonderful. So if things seem a little bit backdated, that's why, and thank you for bearing with us. I hope you enjoy. Oh my goodness, this is so exciting. Mm-hmm. We have two really special guests today. We've got Gabby and Emma from BFN.
Hey! Yeah. I would love to be called really special.
So yeah, special. Man. Honestly, is this like, can we call this a pod clash?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
I like
coin that.
That.
Before you came on, we went, oh my God, what are we going to do? We're so
oh
scared.
My God! We've been fangirling a little bit, yeah. Haven't we?
Well, we know. Are very intimidating, especially me because I'm
so
an ice
scary.
Queen.
She is an ice queen, it's true. And we have brought our swords for the clash, so you better
yeah.
be careful.
Oh, it's a clash. This is great. No, I think it's because you're journalists. Whenever I say that, I think, have you seen that Cilla Black clip? That goes viral. She's a journalist, ladies and gentlemen. I always think of that, but I'm like, these guys ask questions for their jobs.
I know, we just,
you know, talking to a mic, but, you know.
Oh,
but yeah,
no, honestly, that's the same as us, man, obviously, yeah. You know, when it comes to this stuff.
I feel like you guys fun. Are just more eloquent and you'll put things better than we will. So
we do know big words. Some big words. Like anti-disestablishmentarianism.
That's
oh,
a good
wow.
one.
Wow, that is yeah. huge.
Yeah, that is
my biggest word.
To spell it would be a nightmare.
Yeah, I'm not going to try.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you don't know, then if you've been hiding under a rock for the last how many years? Seven?
2018.
Yeah, 2018.
7 years. Yeah.
Gabby and Emma set up BFN, which is it's kind of the OG podcast, right, of fertility.
Yeah. Do you know what? We can't say that. It was the fertility poddy was there before us, and I think Natalie.
Apologies.
Like, was no, Natalie like was really the pioneer in this area. And
okay, fair play. Yeah. Yeah. But there weren't many floating about.
No, definitely weren't.
No.
Can I be honest? I found your podcast in 2018. I just got married, but we weren't even thinking about kids yet. But because I'm an IVF baby, it was always in the back of my head.
Wow.
So, because my parents had IVF for me and my sister in the 90s. I think I was one of those people that was always, it's just really cool. There was like a 9% chance of it working back then. Woohoo,
wow,
miracle.
That's amazing.
Okay.
We've got two of you.
Yeah.
I know, right? They shoved a whole load in there.
But in a different place, didn't they?
In the fallopian tube.
Oh, dangerous.
Wild.
I know.
Surely.
I remember having a friend, it stuck in my mind so much, and I remember her saying to me, like one of the first things she said to me when I first met her when she started at my school was, my sister is a test tube baby. And I remember being like,
test tube baby.
Oh.
what
to do with that.
That's what I've grown up knowing that's what I am, science baby. So I think I was one of those people that was always like, well, I'm going to research right from years and years ago. And then I found you guys back then and there wasn't much out there. No. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad. And then obviously when shit really hit the fan in the last couple of years, I found you again.
Oh, so, that's so nice.
Yeah,
did you email us way back? when you first started listening?
No, I think I was a lurker.
Oh, okay.
But we did. I think that there were messages. We back in, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago, Catherine, I remember we've both messaged.
Oh yeah,
you guys on Instagram. I actually listened to the Audible book before I listened to your podcast.
Yeah. Oh, before. Oh,
yeah, I was in the gym and I remember being like, yeah, see, I'm allowed a glass of wine or two when you're trying to conceive. It's totally fine.
Oh, no, we've ruined so many people's chances.
You were in the gym, though, so balance.
Yeah, right? I know. It, guys. Yeah. Oh, my God. I still haven't listened to our audiobook.
Nor have I. I just remember it being a very intense 2 days.
Was it?
It's a good it's a good lesson. I've really come back to it a few times and to dip in that. And we'll come to all of that. But I think it's fair to say that your sort of brand of, you know, relatable, funny, you know, serious as well, but it really captured people. So, I'm really glad we could chat to you.
And your friendship as well. I'm intrigued. I don't know if I ever really caught. How did you guys meet each other?
Well, we used to work together at a magazine called, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Management Today.
Oh, sexy.
It sounds so unsexy, but it was such a fun magazine to work for. I went to Rwanda to write about the genocide when we were there.
God, wow.
It was really exciting.
It was kind of like all of the pieces were written with the kind of jokes and stuff in them, weren't they? They were kind of like, you had to be quite funny to work there, I feel. And so it wasn't quite as dry and dull as it sounds.
No.
And then we worked together again at City AM, which you may have had shoved into your hand at a tube station in London. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we just became,
pals.
Sisterhoods of the sisters in the...
Of the IVF.
The sisterhood of the pointy needle.
Yeah. And before we kind of get to that, because, I mean, Sian and I know all too well, it's an intense friendship, isn't it, this trauma bonding that we do. But before you get to that, we thought, if it's okay, could you take us back, both of you, to when you first realised that trying for family might not be straightforward, and a rough outline of what happened?
Emma, you go first.
Okay, well, the thing is that when we release a book, I told this story so many times, and I'm worried that I'm going to tell like a different version now, so...
Keep it spicy.
Basically, it's not super exciting. Like, my husband is the carrier of a translocation, which means he's got some chromosomes that don't marry up properly, and it increases your risk of multiple miscarriages. It increases your risk of conceiving a child with Down syndrome. And after we got married, his cousin sent us this letter, like explaining that we should go and see a genetic counsellor. And that she'd like had loads of miscarriages and it'd been really hard for her. And then she'd had termination for medical reasons because she had conceived a Down syndrome child. So she'd had a really hard time and she kind of sent us this warning. And I was like, actually, that's so helpful of her. So we started trying for a baby and I sent my husband off to the doctor. And then he went to the doctor and he by himself went to see the genetic counsellor. And the genetic counsellor was like, where's your wife? And he was like, oh, I thought this was a... appointment just for me. And I was like, okay, whatever. But they immediately referred us for IVF because they were like, with IVF we can look at your embryos, we can see which ones are chromosomally normal. So we went off for the IVF consultation and they said, look, just try for a baby for a while. IVF is really hard. Your chances of multiple miscarriage are higher, but they're not like that high. So we've got the referral. If you need it, we'll use it. But like, you know, just go away and try for a baby. So I tried and we 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 tried and nothing happened. And then I did Clomid because I was like, I'm definitely not ovulating, and still nothing happened. And then I went, so it was a creeping sensation of 3 a.m. Googling, essentially, is what I'm trying to say. That is how I kind of realised that there was something wrong. It was just it was like, I remember thinking, I'm supposed to be having loads of miscarriages and nothing's happening. I'm wondering whether it was happening super early, and then obviously all the kind of investigations began and we realised that I had completely blocked fallopian tubes thanks to a burst appendix when I was 10.
Oh, man.
Wow. And they didn't know, they couldn't have told you that at the time.
I mean, I feel like maybe somebody could have told me that, but they chose not to. Like,
great.
Like if an appendix bursts, there's a lot of gunk in there. Like maybe somebody could have gone, oh, fallopian tubes are small. They could be gunked up. But nobody did. And Yeah, so, you know, we were really lucky in that we had that IVF referral, so we didn't have to sit on a waiting list for a long time, which was amazing. So we just kind of started to get on with it, and then it was a process from there. But yeah, I mean, it was just a long, old slog, basically.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It's fine. We all get through it, don't we?
We move, as Gen Z say.
Yeah.
Gabby, how about you?
My husband basically had mumps in his early 20s. And when I first met him, he told me once this story of how his testicle had grown to the size of a lemon and was swinging around like a pendulum in his pants. And he was kind of laughing about it. And it was like, oh, God, that's gross. But like neither of us were like, oh, well, that might affect your fertility when we decide to have babies in like 5 years when we get married. So forgot all about it. Got married, started trying for a baby, nothing happened. And then, like, the back of my head, the fucking lemon story was like, and I was like, oh God. So, after a year, as you do, we went to the doctor, and yeah, my husband's sperm results were not very good. Later transpired that that ball doesn't work at all. So he's only got one working ball, which is still fine. But I guess it just wasn't, you know, the stuff that was happening wasn't quite good enough. And so, yeah, eventually we got referred for IVF. I was one of those miracles for whom it worked first time, which I, you know, never stopped being thankful for. We've since tried a few times and we've raced through all of our embryos and we've got another kid. It's not a sob story, really. It was IVF, it was hard. There were times where I didn't know if we were going to have kids at all, and I was like, do I just chat up some guy at the bar without him knowing and just get the job done? And then,
yeah, steal some sperm. Like,
oh, how are we going to get through this? But yeah, it has worked out. We are very lucky, but yeah, it's...
And Emma, you, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you were in the same camp as me of it not working first time.
Mm.
Is that right?
Yeah, so we did one egg collection and we got 5 chromosomally normal embryos. And like you do your egg collection, you see the embryos, they've got them, you can look at them. I mean, you can't look at them, but you can see like images of them. And then you lie on a bed and they put one into your uterus and you think, well.
Well, it's in there.
It's in there. And then it doesn't work. And you're like, what the fuck? And I honestly have never experienced, I mean, I've been lucky, I haven't lost anyone close to me before. But a touch wood. But I have never experienced grief like that. Like it smashed me in the face.
It hits you, and I wasn't prepared for it. Sorry, I wasn't prepared for it before. And at the start of this process, I just said, oh, well, as long as we have more than one embryo, we'll be fine. And then the first one didn't work. And it is a shock, I feel like. There's a particular kind of shock when the first one doesn't work. And especially because we have male factor. I was like, great, right. Sperm problem, sorted it. Yeah. Got embryos. Mm-hmm. I totally feel you there. And people don't know about that.
No, really. And like the thing I always say to people is, you know, obviously it's easy for me to say now, like I've had 2 children, but it's a course of treatment. Somebody said that to me after I'd had my first child, so it wasn't that helpful. But I think it would have been helpful if somebody had said it to me. Like, you know, if you think of a course of treatment like antibiotics, right? You're not just taking one pill and hoping for the best.
Yeah,
you're having
helpful.
Multiple embryo transfers and maybe multiple rounds. It's a course of treatment. And at the
That's
end...
That's what it takes.
It's in, you know, again, I don't like to use this word, but if you think, you know, antibiotics is going to cure your chest infection, if you want a cure for your infertility, the best course of action is this course
of treatment.
But yeah. Can I just take back that I ever use the word cure, because that's not a great word, but you know what I mean. It's just that's the one thing that probably would have made me feel better.
That helps me, actually, so thank you.
Good.
Yeah. And in terms of, because I know that you guys obviously both went through it, but you slightly different times.
Yeah, not quite me and Sean, a week apart.
No,
do not recommend.
Yeah, it's probably not the best idea, actually. It's so funny. We were so naive in a way, weren't we, Catherine? We were like, it'll be fine, I'll be happy for you. I'll be happy for you. Yeah.
Totally. And you are, of course you are. But yeah, that it does do a funny thing to friendships. And I know lots of people will resonate with that. Yeah, sorry, Sian, I think you were going to say.
Yeah, so no, I just was going to say that even though it was at different times, I just wondered, you know, if it did affect your friendship with each other, and if so, how?
I thought it'd be fine. Because I got pregnant and was like, well, I've been going through this for 4 years. Gabby will be happy for me. But it wasn't quite like that.
Well, it was.
Of course, yes.
It's a funny thing, which is exactly what you've gone through. We started this podcast. We were on this journey together. We were together. Like every step together, going through the bitching and moaning about people getting pregnant. Like, you know, it was, we were a team. And obviously I was over the moon when Emma got pregnant, but there was a little bit inside me that was like, oh, well now you're on your own. It's just you. And so it was just like, I obviously was happy for Emma. And in my head, I was like, well, I definitely can't vocalise any of this because Emma's been doing IVF for much longer than me. She's already had a failed transfer. I cannot say anything because I hadn't even started IVF yet. So, yeah, it was a funny one.
You kind of feel you don't have the right to be so upset, you know? You go, well, why am I upset about it? And I've had that not so much with Sian, not so that I did have the right to be upset, but I felt that was quite intense. We were at quite a similar stage, but I've had that with friends of mine before, you know, maybe I've been trying for 6 months and someone got pregnant and I thought, well, it's not been that long. Come on. Yeah. It's a really hard thing when it's a physiological reaction. It's really hard to rationalize, I think.
Totally. And even in my inner monologue was never like, I'm really upset with Emma. I'm, this is hitting me hard. There was just a feeling of like loneliness that I just never talked about.
Oh, mate.
Emma, what was it like when Gabby joined the club? Was it just like the best?
It was so. I remember we were walking down Westbourne Grove, and I can't remember where we were going. Probably the pub, if we're honest. probably the Cock and Bottle. But I think you said you just broached it with me, or you said something, and I remember this like uplifting feeling, being like, oh yeah. And when I can't remember what it was, but we started talking about something, because I just wouldn't fucking shut up about it, right? I've learned that my response to trauma is to like talk about it in really inappropriate situations, so I was just going on and on and on and on about it in every situation. I remember when I was about to start IVF or something, Gabby had a party, and then I bored all her friends about it for hours, and you could see their like eyes just like glazing. but
trauma dump.
Yeah, massively. So I guess Gabby knew that I was a safe person to talk to about it. But I just remember her saying something and me being like, me too. Like, I know that feeling. Had you been crying at work or something? I can't remember what it was.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Could have been a crying at work situation. I can't remember what it was, but I just remember that feeling of, oh, my God, me fucking too.
This is when you find
each other.
Yeah, totally. Well,
Sean and I kind of had that because we found each other. And then we saw your post about IVF BFFs and that you were like, hey, who's your IVF BFF? And I was like, I think that's you.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it was.
When you find, so it feels like finding someone in a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, it's like that meme. Have you seen it? What's
yes.
Pablo.
Pedro Pascal.
Oh, I got the name wrong. But yeah, I remember.
It's like they're like, just hold each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also it's always so surprising as well, because you kind of, everyone puts on such a mask, don't they? And then suddenly when they reveal what's actually going on for them, this mask drops and you're like, oh mate, come here. Give me a hug. It's the worst.
I remember there was like, because for me, the TTC was the worst, right? Just trying for a fucking baby and nothing happening.
On your own.
Felt like decades. And I remember one night a relative, let's just go for a relative, saying, I just think you need to relax. And like saying it like quite a lot of times, and me just like feeling so exhausted by it, because I've been told it so many times, and I just like feeling so tired. And then going to bed and like looking on, I had a period app, I can't even remember which one it was, but it had like a forum on it. like a TTC forum, and I put something like, God, is anyone else, this is before I knew that this happened to everyone, is anyone else just really tired of being told to relax? And like three people commenting, it worked for me. And me just being like, oh God, there's no one out there. There's no one. No one gets it.
No one gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, and then Gabby coming along and just being like a shining light.
Oh, mate. Yeah, in the same ship boat together.
Same shitstorm.
it is amazing how it, like, I don't know if you guys felt this, like it totally changed my outlook of what we were going through, but just having someone else. I don't know, it's like, it gives you an opportunity to laugh about it and bitch about it and like, and have those moments where you're like, someone told me to just relax, and then you just like give each other a knowing look. You know, it's kind of just, it makes everything easier. It like, it makes everything more manageable, and you just have this outlet to let off the anger steam.
You've got a safe space, right? I know even now, Sean will not judge anything I say. And vice versa, you know, and it does bond you very quickly, doesn't it?
And I've got a friend who's going through it at the moment, actually, and every time I talk to her, she's like, oh, I'm so sorry that I have to keep going on about this. And I'm like, mate, honestly,
hit me.
I've heard it all. Yeah. Hit me. Yeah, keep coming.
Yeah. It really helps. I don't know what it is as well, but having a sort of friendship through it. I mean, obviously, you've got your partner and they're going through it too in a different way, but they are there. You know, I don't know. I've always found that Andrew, things land slightly differently with him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not obsessed with your uterus, are they?
Well, yeah.
Like you are.
I mean, why not?
No, hard to imagine.
They're not like, oh, was that a twinge? Was that a twinge?
Yeah.
Oh, are my boobs more sore than usual? Like, they're not doing, it's not in their head, like, all day.
I think as well, my husband was like, you know, we've had a really grueling day at the clinic. All we've been talking about all day is IVF. I just want to watch, you know, fucking, I don't know. What do we
Love Island.
Yeah, you know, like interior design masters well with Alan Carr. Do you know what I mean? I just I don't want to talk about what's going on. And then in my head, I'm like, oh, but this is just happening. Is this happening? Is this, you know, you just like, you just hit WhatsApp and like, all of a sudden you've got someone to like bounce.
And I suppose in a similar vein, is that sort of where did the idea for the podcast kind of come from, and how did it start to snowball?
Well, this is my second podcast, actually. I used to run the City AM podcast, which was actually really fun. But it meant that I knew how to do it. It was fun in a different way. No, it was, we recorded in a proper studio, that's all I'm saying. But it meant that I knew how to edit, and I knew like all this stuff, and I knew kind of what I was doing a little bit. So when this happened, I was like, oh, this seems like such an obvious thing to do. Like, somebody must have done it before. And no one had done the like two girls bitching about infertility format yet. So it was quite nice, really. It just started. I said to Gabby, I'm going to do a podcast. And she said, can I be a guest? And I said, can you be a co-host?
That's so nice.
I know.
That's so nice. And I guess at the time, because, you know, 2018, how have you seen the sort of landscape change? And, you know, you were breaking a stigma then. And I know there still is, but not to the same degree. So how's it changed?
So different.
Yeah. Really? I mean, there's the old joke about everyone's got podcasts, right?
Yeah.
Like, how can you tell someone's got a podcast?
Yeah.
They tell you about it. Which I still do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot more out there, but I don't think... I mean, the difference is that obviously we're not the same as we were at the beginning. We're not bitching about our infertility experiences. But because, I guess, of our professional background, we were able to develop it and turn it into something different, which I hope people seem to still listen to and seem to still like.
I think people are talking about it more, which is a great thing. It's on one of my subjects I keep writing about in the newsletters. Whenever it's on telly, I'll do a little telly review of the infertility on TV. Right. But there is a lot of it now. I don't think there was before. I think I think it's wholly a good thing. It does piss me off sometimes, and it really winds me up when people go on non-infertility podcasts to talk about their IVF journeys.
Yeah. Oh. What the fuck is their problem?
Oh, that winds me up.
I listened to one today that was a fertility coach going on to a very big podcast to tell people not to drink tap water. Oh. I was like, can we not?
No. Really?
Can we not?
I mean, for me, like, you know, we're joking, but because there's not many people that have the knowledge to interrogate that kind of statement.
Yeah,
right?
They'll just go, oh, okay,
if
right.
If somebody came on our podcast and said that, we go...
You challenge them.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, I like to think that we challenge... And, you know, we've had a few people say some stuff on the podcast, and...
And you go...
a few times we've just been like, okay. But I think most of the time we interrogate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I don't think we have that kind of person on. Because I think we do a bit of due diligence.
Everyone sort of
first.
Gets it. Yeah. And I suppose there's always the knowledge that actually some things might help someone, and you've got to show all sides of the coin and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that we would never have a fertility coach on, because we definitely would. But what I'm saying
I don't want to badmouth fertility coaches.
No, God. But I definitely think that we'd probably think... we'd know what their message would be. Mm. And if their message was that kind of thing, we probably wouldn't have them on, because it's...
I think we know how dangerous it is, because we've been on the other side going, oh God, what should I do? How can I improve my chances? Oh, fuck, I drank tap water. That's fucked that then. Sorry, am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah, I swear all the time.
Just dropping the F-bomb. Anyway, you know what I mean? Like, we understand what that's like, that crippling anxiety of like, I can't do this, I can't do that, I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do that. So I think, it's dangerous. You know, we get it. So
we
try to be quite measured whenever we say things like that.
Have you ever had, maybe I'm being a bit controversial, but have you certainly maybe in the early days, have you ever had anyone on where you've gone, ooh, big mistake?
Not a big mistake, but there's certainly been some people who've said some stuff that I don't think that we felt comfortable enough in the space to properly interrogate quite early on, and I can't think of an example, actually.
I can't think of any
examples.
Which
is probably good, because
there's one example I have, and this is a great story, and it definitely should have been on the podcast, but I remember thinking, God, I wonder if that's going to fuck people up if they listen to that. It was, do you remember Richard Magley? Mm, yeah. He had that story about when he was doing his sperm sample. His wife had just done her egg collection. He was doing his sperm sample, and he got so nervous and got so into his own head that he couldn't do it.
Oh, no.
And I didn't want my husband to listen to that, because we were going into our egg collection. I was like, because he'll get into his head about it. And I was really kind of nervous that there'd be like a domino effect of like men hearing this story and like...
Yeah.
There were definitely people in that are quite well known in the fertility kind of space that we've never invited on. Because we don't agree, mainly it's me that doesn't agree with what they do or what they say, which is like sometimes been a bit awkward, because maybe they've messaged us with like
you have to. I feel like, and us to a lesser extent, obviously we're newbies in this game, but we even feel that responsibility, and we always want to be a calming tonic and reassuring and informative and helpful. And I think you do feel the weight of it, don't you? And it is a responsibility.
Yeah. It's worrying. And, you know, obviously neither of us are doctors. So when you get people coming on and saying this and that, you know, we've had people who are not doctors, but like certainly doctor adjacent, who've come on and said some stuff. And I've been like, oh, is that true?
And everyone differs in opinion anyway, even in the medical world.
Well, exactly. So But it's you just have to be careful, because it's, you know, it is people's most vulnerable time. Yeah. It is their most vulnerable time. As somebody said, in fact, Melanie Brown, the nutritionist, said to me years ago when I went for an appointment with her, she said, if I told you that standing at a crossroads naked in the middle of the night would get you pregnant, you'd go and do it, wouldn't you?
100%. Like,
yeah, totally.
No problem.
So you just, you know, people do whatever you... And that's why we're quite careful about sponsorships as well. Generally, because you just don't want to tell people to do stuff if you're not 100% sure that it's okay.
And then in terms of guests as well, I suppose the other side, who have been some of your favourite guests, the standout episodes, There's probably too many to count,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's funny because like sometimes you'll get somebody who's a bit of a cold fish who'll come on, and then at the end they'll go, "That was really fun," and I'll be like, "Yes." but like, you know, obviously we've had like famous people like Emma Barnett.
Yeah.
We had Professor Emily Oster, who was great recently. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Those people. Obviously, it just feels like a bit of a triumph because it's like, oh, we matter. Which is really nice.
And of course, Emma, just it made me think, you've also had Louise Joy Brown.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, massively. And actually, you know, so we had Louise Brown.
First IVF baby.
Awesome. And obviously we were just like, oh my God. And she was like, she wasn't.
She was a bit. She was on her promotional tour. I think she was definitely
She was tired.
She was so cheerful and nice. But the writers of the movie, she was promoting the movie Joy.
Jack Thorne,
who has obviously wrote Adolescence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his wife, Rachel, they were so, like...
I love that
ones
episode.
I love
it was so good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I love
that sticks
love
out for me.
Talking about that stuff. It's like... the politics of fertility, the kind of ethics behind fertility, all that stuff is like my favourite stuff to talk about. And Jack and Rachel was just so fascinating on that stuff.
I think when people are kind of generous with their story and also, but also like funny, and you can tell that they're not, you know, it's hard, isn't it? Because some people are just less gregarious about talking and, you know, not as confident. But yeah, it just sometimes you just get the right mix and we can all have a bit of a giggle. It used to be even better when we could get together to do the recordings and drink wine. That used to happen.
Do you know what I was thinking
COVID
about?
COVID fucked that up.
Yeah, really. Do you remember when we had Kate Spicer come with her massive dog Wolfie?
Yes. Oh my God.
So Kate Spicer is a journalist, and I kind of vaguely knew her through, I don't really even know, but she wrote a book called Lost Dog, and I was like, Gabby, we need to interview her about dogs and like the joy of pets and like. She basically, I think one of the reasons that she adopted Wolfie was because, you know, she was kind of had reached a point in her life where she realised she was never going to have kids. And so it was a kind of, it was a story about childlessness. Like, but I'm not really even sure if it was by choice or not, to be honest. But it was also a story about just like how much she loved her dog and pets and how
so
much
wholesome.
We all love our pets. Yeah. And it was so, and like, it was such a nice chat. And we all sat around my table and the dog came in as well. And my cat was very upset about that, but it was just a really nice chat, and it was like a really like a lovely subject to do it on.
I suppose as well, speaking about the ethics of IVF, I know Emma, you're a big kind of not advocate for. Do you know what I mean?
Just
a big speaker outer of. But no, it's really important.
It
there's
is.
A lot of scary stuff happening in the world of fertility, particularly in the US. I mean, that's probably a whole other podcast in itself. But yeah, I know you're quite good at filling us all in, and we're like, oh my God, scary.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with it. I can't stop reading about it.
It's horrifying. It's
terrifying.
Gilead, right?
It is a bit Gilead. I think Gabby writes about like nice stuff, and then I like follow up the next week with the like horror shit show that is the United States of America. And yeah, I mean, so it's, you know, we're talking in early May now, so it's mid to late May when we're expecting the US to release its plans to make IVF more accessible.
Okay.
A couple of sources that I've spoken to have kind of confirmed that they're looking at these kind of ways of doing IVF that keep very right-wing Christians happy, which is really scary because it's things like maybe you're not allowed to freeze any embryos, maybe you have to promise to use all your embryos, maybe you have to, if you don't use all your embryos, put them up for adoption like you would a child. So,
mad, isn't it?
Oh my God.
And it's,
I mean,
you know, it's fucking terrifying.
It is.
I just think of how different all of our stories were. I mean, my story's not done or anything yet, not close, but how different our stories would look and so many other people if that were the case.
Yeah.
And how different people's families and hopes and dreams would look, right?
The idea that like a right-wing religious group is controlling how we do medicine.
It's really scary.
It's disgraceful.
How is that even happening?
And they've also got this idea, what's it called? Something, restorative reproductive medicine, right? RRM, which is the idea. And I read the Heritage Foundation is the organization that wrote Project 2025, which is like the framework for Trump's presidency. And they released this report about a month ago that I've just looked at loads of times and then thought I can't face it. But it's all about something called restorative reproductive medicine, which as far as I can tell is they want to treat a woman's infertility before they do IVF. So like if you've got endometriosis, they're going to try and get rid of the endometriosis. Or if you've got, I don't know, PCOS, they'll try things to like help you ovulate. I was like, isn't that just reproductive medicine? Like, isn't that just normal?
Isn't that just treatment?
But it's all, like, the emphasis is always on the woman. They don't mention male factor infertility at all.
I was actually going to say that. I've noticed that they heavily focus on the woman.
Mm. Yeah, so we can do it on our own.
Yeah.
It's a woman's problem. It's not a man's problem.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah.
Oh,
was going to say, what have you learned about each other over the last like decade?
That's such a good question.
Wow. What have we learned?
You go first, Gabs.
I've learned that Emma is incredibly impatient.
It's true.
But I've also learned that she is just on your side relentlessly, whatever you're going through, and always has always has time to like get, you know, sympathize, get, you know, get on the phone, talk about what you're going through. Like she's there. She is, you know, a great partner.
Aww.
She's my work wife. But yeah, don't leave her waiting for anything for too long. It's hilarious.
But impatient women get things done, right?
Yeah,
so. They do. This is true.
What have I learned about Gabby? She loses things all the time.
Like, same.
She leaves things on trains and leaves water bottles at my house.
It's true. I like to leave things at people's houses all the time because it means I'll come back. That's my
but also that she, I mean, when we're doing an interview, like Gabby is always the one that's like got the most empathy in the world. She is always the one that's like crying along with someone else when I'm just like, okay, moving on.
She's nice to hear about your pain. Goodbye.
She's so generous and empathetic, and also buys really fucking good presents. Like, honestly,
really?
If you're gonna get a present from Gabby, you are lucky because you are gonna get something awesome.
Oh, that's nice.
Thanks. We can live in hope.
Am I quite a like cupboard love person?
What's that?
You know, someone that just wants stuff.
Oh,
that's all you want from me.
Yeah.
Stuff and love. Maybe that's your love language.
Her love language is great gifts. Yeah, but also just like generosity.
Yeah.
But I think mainly, and this is probably the most important point, is that after 7 years of literally messing at each other every day, we're still not sick of each other.
No, we're not. That's quite like each other still.
I do think that's key.
Yeah.
Do you guys do voice notes as well? Because me and Sean voice note to the High Hill.
Yeah. God, we do a lot.
Although quite often it's Gabby doing a voice note and me replying because I've got WhatsApp on my PC, so it's just quicker to type it.
Yeah. You're like, okay. Yeah.
And then we see each other at the weekend socially. Yeah. You know, we do this all week for work. And then we're at the weekend, we're like, hey, it's food for drinks.
Well, out of a, you know, a shitty situation such as infertility, like great friendships can be born. So
yeah.
So nice.
Yeah, amen to that. And to you guys too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to say as well, sorry, just to jump in as well, I know that we need to go soon, is that Catherine's in her 2-week wait right now.
Oh, are you? Oh, mate.
Two days post-transfer.
And so exciting.
There will be a lot of people listening who are probably also in the similar position. And I just wondered, top tips from you guys, 2-week wait.
Oh yeah, can I have them selfishly? This is just for me.
My big tip is that any of those feelings that you're getting, the twinges, they're
ignore
nothing.
Them.
It's drugs. It's all drugs. It's progesterone that's doing that.
And I'm on a lot of them, so yeah.
Yeah, I felt nothing the first time I did IVF, and it worked. So I was convinced it hadn't worked because I didn't feel a thing. The other thing I would say is don't test early, man. Just don't do it. I did it the last... My two middle transfers, the ones that didn't work, I tested early both times and regretted it deeply. It's not a good idea. Just stay That's strong.
Really good.
Yeah.
Good, pithy advice. And then I suppose before we leave you all, where can we find you? Obviously, there's the podcast, there's the book. There's the Substack. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. Can you just talk us through where people can find you? It's great. A lot of stuff to get our teeth into.
Yeah.
Well, we are spending a lot of our time on Substack at the moment. We obviously we finished a new series at the end of December. We've done a few bonuses since on the podcast, which you can obviously find on all of your podcast platforms. But yeah, we're piling a lot of effort into Substack at the moment, which is a newsletter platform which you sign up to, and we do two newsletters a week, and they're both very good.
Yes, Emma? But you do have to pay for one of them.
You have to pay for one of them. Yes. Yeah, that's the Friday one. But it's yeah,
worth it. I can confirm.
Yeah, they are good.
Do you pay?
Yeah.
Oh, guys,
I get it all.
Good. They're really good.
Oh, thanks, guys. Yeah, it's intense actually, but I think we're both enjoying it writing about it. It's kind of what we do, I suppose, so it feels more natural. But obviously the book as well, from all good bookstores.
Absolutely.
The book is particularly handy to you know, I've listened to, I'm an Audible kind of gal, listen to it all once through, and then it's just so great to dip back in and go, oh, that bit, and you know, regardless of where you are in the process, there's something for you. So highly recommend the book.
I do.
So nice.
Yeah. It's so brilliant. Honestly, you guys are like sort of like movie stars in our eyes.
Sean, be cool. Be cool, Sean.
I don't think we look like movie stars.
Oh, God, yeah. How disappointing for you both.
Oh, no. So good. We were like, oh, my God, they actually want to talk to us.
Yeah.
No, we're so grateful that you guys could give us the time. And
well, look,
really, really appreciate
I think it's brilliant that you guys are doing what you're doing, because I think it's really helpful. You know, we did it. We people found it helpful, and I think we can't do what you do anymore. So it's really, really great. And we know it's not easy. Both of us do. So well done, both of you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. We'll take the torch for you. or the probe.
Indeed.
I want to know when, like, the next. Are you going to be doing another series of the podcast?
Because
I just love it.
We'll be back at some point. We'll be back by the end of the year, is what I've been saying.
Yay!
Because that means I don't have to start organising anything, but we're definitely...
It will happen. Yeah, for sure.
Great.
Lovely.
Okay. Oh, thank you, guys. This has been so wonderful.
Thank you.
So nice to chat.
Oh,
so good.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. And, oh, my God, good luck, Catherine.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Thanks, guys. I ate the chips, so I'll be fine, right?
Oh, yeah. That's it. That's all you need to do.
Done it.
It's done deal.
Sorted.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Loads of love.
Bye. We did it.
Oh, my God. Woohoo!
We are proper podcasters now.
Oh, those guys are so profesh.
Yeah, they are.
Their job is asking questions.
And we had to ask them questions.
We did. I hope you liked them.
Yeah, because we wanted to make sure that we kind of talked about maybe different things, because I feel like you're going to hear them on their podcast, hopefully.
Yeah,
now.
Talking about a lot of stuff. Yeah. So. Yeah, and look, most of you will know who Gabby and Emma are and who BFN are, because they're just, you know, massive, and they're almost the OGs, along with Fertility Pod, Matthew Silverman. But they really, I feel like they were trailblazers, and they are, you know, they just do such good stuff. So, but if you don't know who they are, then maybe you've been introduced to them, and
Oh, you're in for a treat.
They're such fun gals. They're just great.
And go back to the beginning, because it is so interesting.
They got their book,
and
smashed
it. Do you know, I used to love their questions to Dr. Tim at the end.
Oh yes, at the end of each ep,
yeah,
they would have, I think they still do it,
a
question with Professor Tim Child. Great name for a fertility doctor.
It is, yeah.
And they kind of bust some myths. It's just so, they're, you know, committed to informative and helpful and, you know, reassuring and all that sort of content. So, yeah, they're on our vibe, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, massively.
Great.
Oh, I'm buzzing. I'm absolutely buzzing to have met them. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's another ep in the bag.
Yeah.
If you want to follow us on Instagram, you can find us at
IVFBFFpod.
If you want to email us, you can find us at
IVFBFF. Like, oh my gosh, it's like a tongue twister. IVFBFFpod@gmail.com.
Correct. yeah, and that's it for another week, guys.
That's it.
So, sending you lots of love, everybody.
Lots of love.
Bye. Speak to you later. Bye.